I'm Madeline Walter.
And I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
Welcome to Definitely Dying, the podcast about health concerns, both real and imagined.
Because it's better to laugh about it together than cry about it alone.
I have a runny nose and an ingrown hair, and
my knee hurts.
My arms are kind of rash. Is that a rash? And I had Asian food, and that makes me feel kind of sick. I might be lactose intolerant.
Hello, folks. Thanks so much for joining us here on a Tuesday or a Wednesday or whenever you're listening. These come out on Tuesdays. We've told you that before.
you may only listen to them on Tuesday if you want the pure Definitely Dying experience.
That's right. Yeah. By Wednesday, we're dead. but yeah, thank you. Thank you for joining us or whatever day of the week you're listening. We really appreciate you stopping by. Madeline. How's your 2017 off to? Does that make sense?
It's off to a good start.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody seems sick.
Yeah, super sick. Everyone's got the worst cough ever.
Yeah. I feel like I read and watched too much like apocalyptic fiction in the past year, and like it makes me think that everything I'm observing is about to like explode into a worldwide apocalypse. Like I keep thinking like, well, this will be the year when like everybody gets the flu and it'll like stop being fun and start getting real, and like the flu will overtake all of us.
We're totally due for an epidemic.
Yeah,
there's like an. It feels like, even just like on a societal level, it feels like when a plague would come about. Like, doesn't it? Like, it just sort of seems like we've regressed back to like, I don't know, maybe the 16th century or something.
I know. I feel like we're in like another Noah's Ark time when we're all going to get our asses flooded and we're going to wipe the slate fucking clean.
I know. We'll be here in the post-diluvian era. we'll be chiming in every Tuesday. By Wednesday, we'll be dead, like we told you. But on Tuesdays, we'll be chiming in about the great flood that wiped out everyone we care about.
Yeah. It really feels like something's going to get us.
Yeah.
All of, like, I feel like my hypochondria is escalating into a general apocalyptic fear that like began as like just a tiny piece of my imagination and is feeling more and more probable every day.
No, I mean, there was something about the end of 26 that signified that progress is not an inevitability. You can just as easily regress back to terrible times, and we are regressing back to terrible times.
Are.
It's a reminder that like that hypochondria. Obviously, we spend most of our time talking about the hypochondria that is specific to physical ailments. But I have the same sort of sense of hypochondriac dread about the world.
Yep.
That I do about my own body.
Me too.
My own body, I guess I spend most of my time thinking about.
I'm becoming less preoccupied with my own body the more and more I become preoccupied with like whether we're going to explode.
Yeah. And we're definitely going to explode. Wow, this has been a dark one. No, what are you going to do? I mean, they're not all going to be peachy keen. We're not always going to be here to tell you about the latest hot new TV show.
Well, and as hypochondriacs, like it does make sense.
Yeah.
That like, I mean, like I feel like whereas I used to like, you know, like lie in bed at night trying to fall asleep, and I would like turn to Ben and be like, I think my teeth are getting loose.
Yeah.
Now I like turn to him and I'm like, are Trump's business interests going to make it so he? A bunch of like foreign countries have like our government in a throttle hold because they're leveraging like Trump's money to have us make political decisions in their favor. And Ben responds similarly where he's like, this is not what we should be talking about at midnight while we're trying to fall asleep. And he's always correct.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Let's not talk about it anymore.
No. Have you been can we talk about Contagion? Have you been around any – like I was like at an audition recently and I felt so bad because I was such a Scrooge because I was sitting next to a woman, like another actress who was there with two children who would have been adorable if they weren't just coughing yeah. in like the dirtiest, phlegmiest, like sick little kid way. Mm-hmm. And I was forced to sit next to her because like they had us, they like paired us in order. And so like yeah. somebody, like the audition session runner was like, all right, Madeline, you'll sit there. So for me to have like gotten up and moved, it would have been like
right,
so rude.
You had an assigned seat.
I just tried to hold my breath the whole time. that can't work.
No.
But.
No.
What do you do?
You get sick. There's no choice.
No, I don't want to.
Maybe you won't.
Sick.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, everybody has this horrible cough right now, and it seems to be lasting forever.
Yeah. It really lasts for a long time.
That's the rough. Like, they don't even – all the everyone will tell you that they're not sick any longer.
Yeah.
But the cough – it sure sounds sick.
Yeah. I thought I was getting sick. I like woke up on Monday and felt like a little sick-ish. Mm-hmm. And I've been really proud of myself because I set myself on a don't get sick regimen, which was stop going to the gym. Because I always will continue to go to the gym when I think I'm getting sick. Mm-hmm. And like I feel like not that I ever like, you know, really expend too much energy at the gym, but it'll like push it over the edge if I'm already like on the road to illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I have like tried to get as much sleep as I can. And I've been like I've been starting every day with a big old glass of water with emergency in it.
Oh, nice.
And I'm knocking on wood.
Nice.
So far, I think I'm holding it off.
Yeah.
But I don't want to jinx it. So I am not going to say anything.
There you go. A little knock.
Should we just keep on? Should we knock our way into the podcast?
Sure.
Okay.
Nope. Not saying it.
Okay.
We're just knocking our way into the podcast.
Guys, we have an awesome, awesome guest. I've been seeing her perform since I've been in LA, and I've always thought she was just so delightfully funny and has such a unique voice. She's a stand-up comedian. She's an actress. She's a writer. You can see her in like a million different things, but right now you can hear her voice on a cartoon called an animated show called Right Now Kapow, which is on what?
Disney XD.
On Disney XD.
But there's an app for that, as there is. If you don't have it, you can still access it.
Oh, nice. That's a good. You can watch it on your TV or on an app.
On your phone.
And hear the lovely voice of Emily Maya Mills.
Hello.
Welcome. Well,
thank you for having me.
So lovely to have you.
Oh, happy. So happy. Anytime you want to talk about anxiety.
I know. I feel like Emily, I always running into you at auditions.
Yes.
Because I feel like a lot of times we like have the same kind of harried energy of like, what are we doing now, but also just spiritually?
Yes. Yeah, I know. I was thinking about that on my way here and how it is, coming to see you made me think of how our job is like 90% driving.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like being a delivery person.
Yes, except for you might go to deliver your thing and people will be like, no, we don't want this. Can't tell you why, but we just intuitively feel like this delivery is not for us.
Right. And they will have our body language will say, get out of here, you know?
Yeah.
You got to put yourself back on the truck and drive away.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
My poor sweet boyfriend had an audition today, and he doesn't usually audition. I mean, he hasn't in years. So, but he had to put on a full suit.
Oh,
and
wow.
He had to go to one of those places that has no parking, so I told him all the tricks.
Oh,
and
good.
It really worked out for him since we're, you know, experienced in that trickery at this point.
Yeah.
I know your boyfriend because I work with him on his pilot script.
Amazing.
And I went to that house,
Yes, yes, yes.
And I didn't know that you guys were dating. dating, and he showed me around the house, and I saw a picture of you as a child, but I didn't know it was you as a child. I was just like, yeah, that looks a lot like Emily Mills. And then I looked around again. I was like, this guy is obsessed with Emily Mills. This son of a bitch is stalking Emily Maya Mills. Yeah.
And I was like, you have my childhood picture.
There's like a picture. Yeah, I was like, huh, that's what a strange thing to have in your home. And I was like, what a strange place we live in where it's not that strange that you would just have a picture of someone that you enjoyed as a child. But then I'd like to say that I eventually did the math and realized that there was some relationship there. But no, I had to be told.
Yeah, that's so funny.
You were like calling the police and he like overheard you. Yeah. Oh, no, that's my girlfriend.
Yeah, that is so funny. What a weirdo you thought he was for a while.
Still think he's a weirdo. Yeah. Chris, you're a weirdo.
Poor guy.
He's a great guy. I really like working with him. Yeah
he's delightful.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought that made me feel stupid. So it was fun. I felt like it was a fun story.
I love it. Can you imagine, like, not even a signed childhood picture? One that he found, took to actually print out at an old school photo printer place.
He just printed it off the internet at his house. He was like, huh, cute kid. There it goes.
Well, I think I'd be more endeared to him if he did that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
There's bad guys that have pictures of you as a child in their home, and there's good guys that have pictures of you as a child in their home. He's a good guy.
He's a good guy. Yeah. He is.
Should we get into our hat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So last year on the podcast, we started the podcast with the same question every time, and then I wouldn't say we got bored, but we were like, oh, we don't have to do this always. Mm-hmm. So now we have something, this weird kind of dirty purple hat. Mm-hmm. It's called the Hat of Hypochondria.
Ooh.
And you can draw a first question, just a mystery question to get our conversation started on a fun surprise.
This is the most exciting thing that's happened to me all week.
Yeah. So okay. Read it and then... I'll take it from you, and I'll read it out loud as the question.
Okay.
But this way you'll know that we didn't just put a bunch of blank slips of paper into a hat and then pretended like there's questions on them and just made one off the top of our heads. Yeah. This is real.
This is real. Yeah. This is real.
Do you what like the
it?
Question?
It's a deep one. Yeah, oh, I do like it? The question. So okay. If you could, would you want to know how you will die?
Oh, yeah. That is a good one. That sounds... We thought of a good question.
Yeah, okay. You did.
Good job.
Moving on. Now select the next question. No, we're not going to let you answer the question. What if we just had people read the questions out loud?
This is interesting.
Just 1 hour on asking questions.
It had not occurred to us that the guest would want to answer any of these questions.
Right. No, people out there just love voices. They like things being said. No.
So would you want to know?
I would not.
No.
No.
Okay.
Because I think... I don't know. I go in phases, but to some extent, I'm not that scared of dying. I'm not that afraid of death. Or like, I'll have periods of very intense anxiety that I think I am dying. But as far as like actually dying, so I feel like if I knew how, it would just give me my brain an opportunity to worm around and obsess about it.
Right. Yeah. Like if you found out that you were going to die of like, say, for instance, throat cancer, every sore throat, you'd probably think... That was the one. Gesundheit, Madeline.
Gesundheit.
Thank you. Madeline.
Speaking of throat cancer.
Yeah,
I'm a winner.
I think Madeline, you did a really good job of going off mic for that sneeze.
I know. I'm trying not to sneeze.
This is
right into the mic.
Sickness, so you should do it on mic. Into the mic. Keep that.
Matt, what about you, Madeline? Do you want to know how you're
doing? No, absolutely not.
No.
Not
even, like, what if you found out? Like, what if you knew how you were going to die, but you also knew that it wasn't going to happen for a very long time? Like, would that make it better? I'm not saying that you would suddenly want to, but would it be better to know that it wasn't something that you had to have anxiety about in the moment? You just knew what the thing was?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it would just provide too much of an opportunity to mull it over.
Yeah.
To think, I get, yeah. I'd be like, hit me with. Give me your best shot.
Right.
You know, like just take me when you're going to take me.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Whoever
yeah.
you are.
Right, yeah. Who are you?
Who am I talking to?
That guy who has your picture up in his childhood pictures up in your home.
Bad one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, come get me.
You know where
no,
I am.
I'd rather not know that you were coming to get me yeah. at some point.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, I feel like it's funny because I wonder if death being an sort of a fundamental unknown makes us think about it less or more.
Yeah. Because
mm-hmm. my first reaction when you asked me that question is I don't want to know, because I feel like if I did know how I was going to die, I would think about it more. Because, mm-hmm. you know, it would be like when you think, like, you're going to go on a cruise next year. Yeah. You, like, think about right. that all the time.
What's it going to be like? Will there be shuffleboard?
Yeah, like, what do I pack? A lot of stuff? Or will I just wear the same thing every day?
Probably just the same thing every day.
The same
also
thing
every
in
day.
Death. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Very true, yeah. Every day.
But I wonder, like, is it, like, I wonder, I guess, like, when we think about death, it's there are, like, so many possibilities. I wonder if... like eliminating those possibilities would fundamentally make you think about it less.
Interesting. Yeah. I kind of wonder yeah. what would happen socially, like what would happen to us if we knew.
Yeah.
Would that change how we interact on a daily basis? Would that change
how
we...
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you think about like when somebody gets a sickness, like I don't. My mom, for instance, has MS. You know, like there's MS support groups. Mm-hmm. So it'd be sort of like a preemptive support. Like this is the thing that's going to get you, and we're all kind of in it together. Mm-hmm, you know that it's mm-hmm. going to get us.
Yeah.
And you know, I think predictively we could probably figure out what was most likely to get us anyway. So which mm-hmm. makes me think, what if you were given a list of five things and you were said these are the things that you know either like wait what's what's congenital mean? Is that
I want to say.
Is that genes?
I want to say it's heart.
It's congenital heart. Heart. Like, congenital heart failure. Right. How okay. I always hear it, but I don't know what it.
It's not the word I'm looking yeah. for then.
It sounds like fatal to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it does,
but,
yeah.
But maybe it means fatty and clogged up.
A congenital disorder is an often inherited medical condition
okay,
that
yeah.
occurs at or before birth.
So then if you could find. So like if it, you know you'd have like this list of five things, like maybe some of them are based on congenital things, like you know this is there's a history in your family, maybe there's some things that are based on just lifestyle choices, like
yeah.
I smoked for a long time, so when I was a smoker it felt like, well, you could put you know lung cancer on the list, you know, or whatever
yeah.
something
yeah.
like that, that like if I was given a list of the things that were most likely to get me, I think that would cause me to make changes in my life that were positive. But just knowing the one thing, I think I would kind of give up on life. Not
yeah.
entirely give up on it, but, you know, like that thing where you're just sort of like,
yeah.
well, there's the true mystery of life is gone.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, mm-hmm. you don't know when it's going to get you. But I think that, like, we've talked on this podcast so many times about how you kind of pick your poisons in this life. That, like,
yeah.
if I died, if I jumped out of a plane – to you know, to parachute down, you know, to Earth. I don't know why I worded it that way. That was a bad way of saying it. If I skydived and I died doing it, I would be so furious as I was dying because that's just not me. Like, why am I going out that
right.
way? Like, it's
this
silly.
Isn't
yeah.
me.
Yeah. That with cigarettes or whatever, it was just like if they were like, all right, well, lung cancer is the one that's getting you, I would just start smoking again and I would just smoke until
right.
I would fail
yeah,
as a human.
Yeah, I feel like a lot answer. Of that would be happening, just getting to the bottom of those Pringles
yeah.
cans.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Butter, and then, butter on everything.
I guess it like what the question also gets to the point of like, if it's written, like your life being like written already a little
yeah.
bit, like,
yeah.
you know, because like, I wonder, like, how weird would it be if, like, we each had, like, a little, like, bubble floating above our head that said what was going to kill us, but it could change, you
yeah.
know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you, like, you quit smoking,
right.
and then it changes to, like, rock climbing
yeah,
accident
yeah.
or something. You're like, wait a
suicide.
Second.
Hey, I wanted those cigarettes back. I think that'd be kind of...
Because that's kind
I'd
of what
that.
We're doing
yeah.
when we're changing our lifestyles. It's like, yes, it's to live longer, but it's also to basically just... try to have a little more control over mm-hmm. what kills us.
Yeah.
Because something will.
Yeah.
Yeah, most
yeah.
certainly. I understand that fear. I smoked as well. And mm-hmm. I recently ended up at an ENT with a camera in my throat because I was so, like,
I've had it too.
Panicked.
Yeah. Oh, you
were afraid you had... throat cancer?
Yeah, definitely. Wow. Partly because I have this like sort of throaty way of talking. And my aunts have it. It's genetic. My brother's also sort of a low throaty talker. But it seems like it's gotten worse. And to some extent, I'm like, is it because I talk into a microphone all the time? I'm amplified, so I don't have to try very hard. Is that what's making it seemingly worse? Or, you know, or is my mother, she's in denial about being losing her hearing.
Yeah.
So she keeps blaming us. And I'm like, which one is it?
Yeah.
Am I getting worse or are you lying about not being able to hear? But yeah, I was it was all fine. Except that my natural speaking voice is the muscles, the vocal cord muscles are very engaged and tense. Like if you had like a knotted back.
Oh.
Just from speaking naturally. So I think whatever. It's
is
like
that
a
bad?
Very
are you not
dorky
supposed
result.
To? Is it like
do you have, like, nodes or something?
Yeah, I think it's not even nodes. It's that it's, like, clenching.
Oh.
In what would be, like, looks like screaming on someone else.
Oh.
Whoa.
So you're all, what your throat always thinks you're screaming.
Yeah, basically. And I am inside a little bit.
Yeah. That's, like, such a, yeah. It really
it's
is,
because
like
I don't know how.
Yeah.
You just have the quietest scream in the world.
Yeah.
Emily in my IMLs, this woman is always screaming. You just
always
don't
screaming.
Know.
That's my bio and all my social media.
That's a great one-woman show title. Yeah. Emily Maya Mills, always screaming.
Always screaming. That's so funny.
That's so funny.
Oh, it's interesting because I am writing a new show and it's called Emily Maya Mills is Terrible at Small Talk. It's not exactly unrelated.
Yeah.
No.
Ah,
no.
Interesting.
Why do you feel you're bad at small talk? In the same way that like I feel like all comedians are? Or is it like something specific that you...
I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out with this show. Yeah, I hate it. I need to get right in, dig deep, you know, the banter of, you know, the niceties. Some people are so good at it and they just have that muscle that's like, I like your pants. You know, it's like a beach
ball. I feel like you're so good at that, though. Like, you're someone
you
like. Yeah.
Right.
Like,
well,
I don't like strangers.
Sure.
Strangers are very difficult for me. I'm not a, psychopath, but I, you know, I don't love parties.
No, neither do I. Neither do I.
Yeah. That makes all of us.
Yeah. It might be a comedian thing.
So I'm glad you pulled such a heavy question out of the hat of hypochondria.
Yeah.
Right?
I know. There are a bunch of them just said, like, where'd you get your shoes?
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, do you like Band-Aids?
Yeah. One of them is, how's your folks?
One of them is just, what have you been up to?
Oh, wow. That's a big broad. Okay. Putting a lot on your guests here. Everything. Well, driving here was pretty smooth and
yeah. So you mentioned your mom earlier. So where were you raised for starters?
I was raised in San Francisco in the city, and it's pretty rare, and I think even more rare now that it's like Google.
You have
world.
To be a baby literally made out of money to be raised in San Francisco these days.
My mom and my brother still live there, and when my brother moved with his wife into their house before they had my first nephew, who's now 7, so about somewhere just before the bubble burst or whatever, and they've said like if we ever wanted to move again, we would not be able to live here. We would have to move somewhere else in the country.
Yeah,
wow.
It's insane.
It's crazy.
It's very crazy.
That sounds like a threat.
Yeah, there are no natural borns. I mean, there are obviously natural borns that are made of money. They're diamond. Mm-hmm. Babies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They're made
how lucky.
Software, technology, and diamonds.
So what was your upbringing like?
So,
were you
They were like super hippies. They were out in before I was born, they were out in this area called Weimar, California, at the foothills of Auburn County, and they built their first house by hand and had a, you know, weed garden and, you know, heritage their buttholes and and then what that translated to for me growing up is that like you just didn't get sick, like there was no aspirin, there was no staying home, like there was no doc. I mean, we went to the doctor for our checkups and everything was sort of like legit in that regard, but it was just so it's funny because I think now in retrospect I think hippiedom is a little bit was a little bit related to like having parents that came either as immigrants or and then lived through the Depression. So there's like this connection to the generation before that was like, you live off the land, you suck it up.
Yeah.
You don't buy a lot of crap.
Yeah.
You stop and smell the flowers and whatever else. So there was a connection to that. But yeah, we just didn't. And that meant that as a child, I was constantly trying to break my legs. Like, constantly trying to get sent to the hospital. I never broke a bone.
Yeah. Why? Because you just...
Because I was never sick. I just wanted... I think it was hypochondria.
You were like, what's it like?
Or, yeah. I wanted the crutches. I wanted... I made crutches in wood shop. That was what I chose.
You made crutches? Yeah. Everybody else was like... Making
life.
Yeah.
That is a cry for help.
No, it really was.
Emily Mills, always screaming.
Always screaming. Always eating shit really hard, too. Just like I was at five, a very aggressive skier. I mean, not good.
Yeah.
Just aggressive.
I
was just, I would really, I remember the worst I ever got. And I would try to get taken to the hospital. I would like hurt myself badly. So terrible.
Were you fearless? Was it out of a sense of fearlessness or was it out of a sense of like wanting some level of attention that you weren't getting?
A little bit of both, for sure. And I think it was probably in retrospect about the attention because we were very latchkeyed. My parents worked full time. It was like one of those like, 80s upbringings that looks like a movie about a lady in a pantsuit. a dad. My parents are great, but it was tough for a long time and I was like never home. And there were a lot of things that kind of resulted from that in terms of having a tough adolescence and all this other stuff. But the first, probably most literal form of crying out for attention was,
trying to break legs
all the time.
What would you literally do to try to break it? Like, would you fall hard?
Well, I think that it would spill into the fearlessness thing a little bit because I think I like at one time I pulled, we didn't have weather in San Francisco. And I was always in the fog, but if it got sunny, it was like, we'd lose our minds. And I had this jungle gym in the backyard with like a fireman's pole down the middle. And so I got one of those huge old school metal basins, a wash basin, and filled it with water and put it at the bottom of the pole because I wanted to make a slide where I'd land on the pole. But it was all a bad idea to begin with.
Yeah.
And like, definitely, once you're wet and going down a pole, you're dropping out of the sky, basically. So
yeah, there's a reason that you will never see a water pole at a water park.
Water pole.
Or at a strip club. There's all the way around. Bad idea. It was a very bad idea. But yeah, I was just trying to drop out of the sky into a bucket. And that did get me a run to the emergency room.
Okay.
To no result. It was badly bruised. I always had a badly bruised whatever. I mean, one time I ate it so hard skiing that I had a boot top injury, but it was a badly bruised, I snapped off my ski or whatever, but I got to go down the hill in a toboggan and have them cut my pants open.
Whoa.
Still not broken.
And how would your parents react when that would when those kinds of things happen?
For the most part, they were sort of like so tough love about sickness because like no one could ever really stay home. So there wasn't a lot of staying home for sickness, and like I think to some degree they must have known that, I have 12-year-old stepkids, so you kind of know when someone's like pushing it for for their own kind of their minds being creative about things. And I'm sure to some extent so it would have to be bad enough. But if I could get myself to the emergency room, I mean, once a week, I'd be more than happy. I was like crying all the time. So I think they gave in, occasionally if I was crying hard enough and putting on enough of a show.
Yeah, I do. Otherwise, Child Protective Services comes. And a certain volume to crying before some people intervene.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
What did your parents do that they were at work all the time?
My mom was a corporate architect for the power company. So she had wanted to be an architect since she was a kid. And then when she did go to work as an architect, she left small firms pretty early on in her career and then worked for these like giant, as basically a property planner. And during that time, she was working on the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant and flying to San Luis Obispo, which I think is now shut down. One of her, this is a fun fact, one of her old college buddies was outside picketing constantly.
Oh my
God. Every time
she'd
go to work in there.
That's so funny. Yeah.
That's another, that's like another movie about a pantsuit lady.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, the perfect like moment of like seeing her pass. Like that person like fades into a flashback of themselves with like a different haircut.
Yeah, so many bandanas.
We used to be best friends.
Yeah. I really, that was probably, and I think they'd go out to breakfast after sometimes. Yeah.
That's so funny. That's oh, I love that.
Yeah, that's a great story.
Really it is. Let's make that movie, guys.
All right, we're going to wrap this up and get to work on our script. thank you so much for joining us, everyone.
Yeah, fun. It could be a very sketchy world.
Yeah.
Guys, let's write that as a stage show. Yeah. Why not?
Okay, let's do it.
More profitable than the movie idea.
Always bring it to the UCB stage. Do you get headaches much?
Not a lot. Okay. I'm a water pusher.
You're a water pusher. Okay.
What does that mean?
I'm notorious for telling everyone it's probably that they didn't drink enough water. Whatever it is.
It's probably true.
Yeah, that is probably
I think like
true.
85% of it.
Yeah.
Well, it occurred to me because you were saying that that we have a couple of games sort of today that one I think will be real interesting to sort of play with because you grew up without like medicine in the home kind of stuff, and so there's something specific to that. But no, I did a little research on traditional Chinese medicine's response to headaches, and so we got some facts. You want to learn about stuff with us?
I do. I definitely do because I'm going to push these two.
Nice.
I'm all about it.
okay, let me pull this up. So this is something called "What is your headache telling you?" A traditional Chinese medicine approach. So I did a little bit of reading on it, and then listeners out there who are familiar with my antics, I forgot to finish. So we're all going to learn together. But I was reading it, and I was like, "This is really interesting." Then I just fell asleep. not because it was a long story short. Lately, my phone has been dying really quickly. Like, I don't know if it's just a thing. Like, you have your phone long enough, and then it starts to die. And so
your
then
phone
I have to...
needs to be on this podcast.
Yeah, my phone needs to be on this podcast. My definitely dying telephone was on 1%. And so I was reading this article, and I brought it into the bedroom, and I laid down for a few minutes to charge it, and I never woke back. Anyway, I eventually woke back.
That was noon yesterday. Yeah,
nice.
that was 9 p.m., and then I woke up.
Your beard is very long.
Then I woke up at like around like 4 in the morning, and I thought it was like 4 in the afternoon, and I had missed the podcast.
Oh my gosh, yeah. What a feeling.
And so Madeline's funny. And I would do this for Madeline as well. There was like no message. I was like, oh, how sweet of Madeline to
not even check to see if you're definitely dead.
She just did it for me. She just did the podcast. So thank you, Madeline. For
you're so
you
welcome.
Done.
What you don't know is I did record a couple episodes at 4 a.m. last night. Yeah, and I didn't bother to wake you up.
Madeline records a lot of episodes at 4 in the morning.
Hey, you and Trev.
By episodes, I mean it's inside my head. And by record, I mean constantly worry.
Oh, yeah. Sweat into your bed. Yeah.
Constantly worry would be a good podcast in accompaniment.
Definitely
dying. Yeah.
A little spin-off.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah. Get the sassy neighbor to start.
Yeah, I know. Our sassy neighbor generalized anxiety.
General anxiety, a military man. Okay. So the first question that the traditional Chinese medicine asks us is, why is the headache occurring? And so here we say symptoms can be valuable information on which areas of the body are not in balance. Stress is a leading root disturbance in overall wellness. So a lot of times it's going to be a stress related thing, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we've determined on this podcast at the very least is that something happens, you start worrying about it, it's a headache.
Yeah.
That's what we like metaphorically refer to. It's like,
what a headache.
Yeah, a headache. And then literally there's a headache.
Yeah.
Yep.
So almost all headaches can somehow be linked to stress. Let's remember this, people.
Yeah.
By closely watching the signs and symptoms of the body, we can help our patients understand how stress can create imbalances in any body system.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm talking the way that I am, but I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah, it's official.
Yeah.
It's
yeah. People, you got to listen to me. I've been talking
Move
about headaches.
Move over, Dr. Oz.
Right.
Yeah.
So the Dr. Phil can sit down. I'm going to be quiet so he can speak. Okay. So it may be helpful to have patients view their headaches as an opportunity to take a break, close their eyes, and remove themselves from stress, even if the break from stress is brief. All symptoms give valuable information, and headaches are a great opportunity to discover what your pain is telling you. Helping patients find balance in their daily schedule with plenty of breaks and adding some enjoyment can be of tremendous help in reducing head pain. So that's how we start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Questions, yeah. Which I have no answers.
That all makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It weirdly makes, not so weirdly, makes me think of meditation.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. I do meditate, and I've found that strangely enough, when I do it regularly, I can feel the effect that it has on my breakouts. Like I,
because
that stuff is actually, yeah, it's like stress. I never really connected it before. I've always thought it was food related or whatever, but like, and it can be, and it can be the way that your body's reacting to food or whatever, or processing, or like not processing.
Yeah.
It's not in alignment because it's because of some kind of stress resistance.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we eat because of stress, and so then we associate it with the food that we put in our body. But no, it was stress that caused us to, you know, maybe binge eat or to eat things that were unhealthy for the body.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, the sort of alignment factor, if you're talking about headaches, it's like you're absorbing all the stimulus, and if it's too much, or you're over processing, or you're not able to process, you know, cleanly, you're not. There's a resistance. There's like. It would make sense that pain would be caused.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
So taking a moment to sort of like not have to be overloaded or, you know, running your filter, overrunning your filter or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Clogging yourself up.
I like that term. Overrunning your filter. That's a good term.
Yeah.
Let's hold on to that one.
Okay.
I'm going to write that down.
Next week on Daytime TV.
How to avoid always screaming by overrunning your filter. Could I have a pen? Thank you. Oh, I didn't miss her. I mean, the one that you were writing with in your very hand.
Another pen materialized in your hand.
That was
almost instantaneous.
That was crazy.
It was really remarkable.
You grew a pen.
Yeah. You grew a pen.
One day.
Okay, so let's... Oh, hey, this will be fun for everyone. Turn out I was reading from the bottom, not the top. So now we'll go to the top where more information is. So this is the big thing. Where is your headache located, right? So location is a very important concept in TCM philosophy, traditional Chinese medicine. Traditional Chinese medicine uses the body as a map to identify both physical and emotional imbalances. Mm-hmm. The location of the headache can provide the first clue to successfully reducing headache-related pain. It tells us where there is a lack of flow or congested energy in the head. The area where pain is experienced is related to a specific organ, emotion, and time of day. For example, pain located on one or both sides of the head is associated with the gallbladder. We often think of this type of headache as a tension headache. The gallbladder is associated with decision-making and the ability to pay attention. Emotions of stress, anger, and frustration are associated with the gallbladder. It is easy to see why these types of headaches are so predominant. Long hours at work or at the computer can contribute to their development.
Huh.
So that's a good stopping point, right?
Wow, interesting. Yeah. I forget sometimes what exactly the gallbladder is, an additional filtration, correct? We're talking about filters.
Yeah, yeah.
Filters.
Yeah.
Actual filters.
I don't really know much about the gallbladder. Do you?
Yes. No. I know people get stones
they can have
in
them
it.
Removed gallstones. Gallstones. Yeah. What appendix can come out?
That's the gallbladder. Yeah.
Gallbladder is like, I think, a small bag off of one of the larger
kidney
filtration.
It's a small storage organ located interior and posterior to the liver. Though small in size, the gallbladder plays an important role in digestion for food,
Interesting.
I think it, like, shoots some bile into the mix, so it, like, helps you break stuff down.
Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then you shoot some bile in the mix. I don't know why that made me think of the Brady Bunch, but it did.
Always. Bile. Brady Bunch.
How do you experience stress? Like, how do you deal with it?
How do I deal with it? I think I actually carry so much in my back and shoulder and muscles.
Oh,
in my, so anytime I get a massage, like the person will be like, "Oh God, oh my Jesus!" And, but that's just kind of how maybe like my throat. That's like where I'm holding everything. Lately, it's been like I used to have issues with my lower back, but lately it's been my so much is being held just below my left shoulder that like that knot could take out my whole back if it gets too intense, and it is definitely stress related.
That's crazy. Yeah. I have all my, it's like my, I'm in my shoulders too.
Yeah.
My, like right here, my left shoulder is like always.
Yeah.
Like there's like a rock hard knot in it almost constantly.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Heck.
I also think though that like a lot of it originates in the shoulders, and then there's something about the way that we all sit at desks that then puts additional like physical strain on the shoulders, which then causes more stress. Like it's sort of just a, it's a loop-de-loop of like all sort of contained right here.
Yeah.
Like stress causes it, then it causes stress, then stress causes just back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah.
Because I always have mine. Yeah. Right in here.
Yeah. And then the relationship between the stress and the physical gets, it's always for me, I think when I start to like take a dip and like, sort of slide into more of a depressive mode, it usually starts physically. Like,
me too.
I'll get really, I guess, overloaded, and my motor and even speech kind of motor skills get super tired, super fatigued. It feels like, and it can also be connected to insomnia. So it's like this weird arrhythmic thing that starts to happen and spin out.
Yeah.
So then like if you're not sleeping, and then the next thing you know, you're suffering from fatigue, and then the physical sort of pulls down the mental, and then it's 4 months later and you really need to go to the gym. Whatever.
Yeah. Well, then it's 4 months later for me, folks. No, it's... 100% agree. It and then at least what I'll notice in myself is that I'll go to the gym, and just as you get older, the gym just gets harder. Like it's very difficult to take time off from the gym, and I don't think there's anything that makes me sadder than going to the gym and finding out that I can't do it as well as I used to, because that's such a symbol of aging. You know, like that's just sort of like, well, I'm never recovering from this one. I'm done.
No, one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I see it real enthusiastically.
Yeah. Well, hey, here's your literal towel. Yeah, I'm throwing it in.
Exactly,
plenty of old ass people go to the gym.
Oh, yeah.
I know, but like, they're good.
Yeah.
You don't see like a lot of old ass people that are like, you don't look like you go to the gym. Like, there are old ass people at the gym who, like, look like they invented the gym. You know?
No, I see a lot of old people at my gym who look like they could have just gotten there.
Really?
Yeah, it's my favorite part about my gym. It's it just feels like there are like all kinds of people who are like, maybe your eyes weren't open to them.
Wow.
You also been in Hollywood too long.
Weren't spending as much time on the ellipticals, which I think is like everybody's starting point at the gym.
Right.
And also the ellipticals at my gym and your old gym overlook the pool, which is where like a lot of the
oldies
are.
That's true. Like without
you were more like hanging at the weights.
Well, now I know who you're now I know who you're referring to. There's an old swimmer contingent at the LA Fitness that's like not doing anybody favors by coming out in their skivvies. I mean, I love
them. Doing me a favor.
That's true.
By making me go,
for you.
Good on you.
Yeah.
That's cool that you're
at
the gym.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that it proves that at a certain point, just oxygenating your bloodstream is important.
Yeah.
Also, probably for overall stress and overall health.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, so many things can kind of result from just, like, not circulating your... Because, the circulating is what gets the blood in there. And it can be done by breathing, I think. And, also, Christian was recently reading something about a guy who's really pro cold swims and cold showers. Yeah. Because I think it does the same thing.
Yeah,
now, I would prefer to exercise than take a cold shower.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah.
Any day of the week.
Yeah,
no, 100%.
It's a similar philosophy where it's like, because your body is shocked and working to warm itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Your blood is, your cells are opening up and oxygenating.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense, but it's hard to make sense of why anyone would choose that way of, I guess it's quicker. I don't know. I mean, like, you know, just, you know, maybe
30 seconds in a cold shower or whatever, as opposed to like an hour on the elliptical machine.
Or if you do both, you're just this machine.
Yeah.
Specimen.
Superhumanity. Yeah. I think that's this guy's goal, is to just be,
He's
superior specimen.
Yeah. It's just a, no, it's such a, like a, just like the, those terms, like it's such a like a. I just saw the picture of that guy, that white supremacist that that like is Trump's chief advisor or whatever, that like that really looks inbred or whatever. But
which
like,
one? Which white supremacist? You talking about Bannon? Yeah.
No,
or the other Sessions? Jeff Sessions?
I don't think it's either of them.
Is it a new one?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Just collecting them.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try to find it or whatever. Yeah. But the point is, just like when we talk about becoming a superior human or whatever, it's just become like so. It's like, oh, it's like this is one of Trump's people.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah.
The term superior human is
very
is
icky
out.
Right now.
Yeah.
No, I know.
Yeah.
Very tough. God, what a where the hell are we?
I know. We it, like keeps effect, coming sure. back to it. We were
This is a good one. Who is associated with the headache? An interesting cause of the modern headache is associated with the company that we keep. Asking patients key questions can provide important clues. For example, who is your pain in the neck? So who is?
No.
Do you guys have a pain in the neck that that you?
It's saying the people around us are causing our headaches.
Well, yes, So they're saying like, who causes you? Who's your pain in the neck? They're saying like that's like a there's some literalism to that. Do you guys have like somebody you can think of, whether you announce it on the podcast or not, that like that is just a cause of stress in your life?
You know, I think maybe. Not. And maybe that has a little something to do with not having frequent headaches. But like, I can remember times in my life, you know, decades that that was not the case. And there were certainly pains in my neck. And then you start to, you know, cleanse your life and make choices that are healthy for you. And that means people for the most part. So I feel like at this point, I'm pretty lucky and pretty happy with most of the people I interact with. And then, you know. Some work related thing, some bully like, out there. Yeah. I mean, they always exist, but try not to hang with them.
Yeah.
When did that happen? Like, when do you feel like you cleansed your life?
Gradual, like after moving out, I had a very dramatic sort of sociopathic first love boyfriend that lasted for like 5.5 years. And then like I think I was repeating some patterns in relationships with like, you know, one of my best friends from college who I moved out here with. And that sort of wasn't healthy. And by the time that, you know, you turn around after each one of those experiences and you go, I participated in that to some extent.
Yeah,
and also that went on for way too long. And what's the pattern and how can I break it? And it, you know. Clearly there are some personality types that, you know, your not best self can click with because of the familiarity of, you know, your upbringing and personalities and your, you know, guardianship or whatever, authority figures or people that have been close to you and you sort of repeat those. And then that beautiful thing about humanity is that our minds are pretty, you know, pliable and our emotions are pretty pliable and it takes a lot of work, but you can change.
You can change what kills you.
Different bubble.
I try to think also that like that person out there who's my pain in the neck, that I'm probably theirs too. That it's just like, I think it's easy to just to say this is a one-way street. Like this person annoys me, but chances were just not particularly compatible and that like for whatever reason we stick with people that we're not necessarily all that compatible with. Maybe some of it stems from like that same thing that you were talking about, like about childhood where you know we're sort of we're not necessarily doing the things that are best for us. You know, we throw ourselves on the ground and try to break our legs for the attention of it. And then you know, and then well, there goes my mic. And then in this particular instance it's sort of like sometimes we like the drama of difficult relationships or whatever, you know, that like it seems like we frequently end up in not the easiest ones, the ones that like that maybe we get bored of the easy ones a little quicker.
There's all these sort of connections back to the beginning of the conversation, because I think the longest lasting contentious relationship I had was with my mom, and that was a lifetime, you know, since I was a kid. It was very bad. It was like very challenging for both of us. my entire, you know, childhood and growing up. And part of it was the abandonment, I think, you know, in having done some work and just kind of knowing that, you know, in retrospect, like whatever anger mounts from not being able to bury your head in their skirt when you're hurt or whatever, you know, because they're, you know, specifically with a mother.
Yeah.
And so being able to identify that stuff. But even before I had, I think, that type of, I guess, enlightenment around that subject, I think it was the one thing that didn't make me feel very good. You know, it was like the one thing that there were all of the other relationships in my life and all the other parts of my life made me feel very good.
Yeah.
And on track and positive and, you know, healthy and hopeful and all those things.
Yeah.
And that was like the one that I really had to take a hard look at because it would continue to be something that made me feel not very good.
Yeah.
And I think I've, for the most part, I mean, I'm not perfect, but I don't. You know how when you go home for holidays and like those relationships, you just sort of just dive right back into the dynamic of like, you know, whatever it is, the bickeriness or whatever it is. And I just try to not go there and try to have respect for who that person is and just not dive in and do my best. Who knows, you know, I'm going Saturday. So we'll see. I'll report back.
I mean, I would say there's no, at least in our lifetime, there's been no more useful opportunity, I would say, to try to test that theory.
Yeah.
It's like, this is really what people are going through right now. And I think that that sounds very healthy to me.
Yeah.
Hey, good on you.
Hey, you know, we'll do our best.
How were you able, like, I know it was like a gradual process, but like, what inspired that shift, or what, can you put your finger on it? Or,
I think there was a little bit of like recognizing, I think I always felt like I was causing it or I couldn't really put my finger on what. I think putting my finger on what the root was important, but also that it was we both carried it, and so there was some behavior that was repetitive for her as well, that I was like, oh, when I recognize, you know, we're all fallible, parents aren't perfect, that there's something going on there too that is repetitive in her behavior. And I'm going, I'm falling into it. Whoever's falling into it, somebody needs to pull the ripcord.
Yeah, yeah.
And identifying that, you know, I could do my part and also respect that she may have some flaws.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like identifying, like, just like being able to sort of name something and recognize it. Yeah, I feel like it's so... so important.
Yeah,
and I feel like empowering. We've talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah, being able to put a name. I had a lifetime too as a kid of like sort of having undiagnosed ADD or whatever. And so as an adult, being able to read about adult ADD, I think I was after the hump with like people, that being a condition. I was like taking all these specialists and they're like, well, she's not dyslexic and very smart and, you know, whatever it is. And I just knew that I could not pay attention. I had a very hard time paying attention.
Me too.
And to be able to name it, to educate myself on it, actually took away so much of like the sort of guilt of, you know, whatever I was doing to myself in my head about feeling deficient.
Yeah.
So you never got any Ritalin. They never put you on it.
No, no, I was never medically diagnosed. I will say that I've had it, and sure, it does help.
but probably so like a good bump of cocaine.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking about that recently. I was like, how is this okay? Speed.
My dad grew up with really severe ADD, but he was, you know, also like just didn't grow up in a time when that was a thing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he was like, he's like a really smart guy, but like was really badly behaved in school because he, like, the way he puts it is, you know, like he couldn't sit still, he couldn't focus. And then when you're like bad at everything, you want something to be good at. So he was like good at being like basically like a troublemaker.
Yeah.
And then like much later in life, like as a full adult, like he'd already had, you know, like myself and my brothers, he finally he was diagnosed with ADD and he tried taking meds and it made him just feel so weird that, you know, he sort of now just like has his systems and you know, is really like meticulous about like, you know, he just, how everybody kind of has their system for making their own special brain work for them.
Right.
But like, it's just so interesting that just simply identifying something makes it so much easier.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that about anxiety. Like, I'm not, like, you know, I've never, like, been, like, diagnosed with, like, specific, you know, like, I don't know, clinical anxiety. Sure. But even just, like, talking about it more and more on this podcast and being able to just, like, pinpoint that, like, sometimes what's happening in my brain and my body is, like, simply this, like, sort of tendency that exists because of my brain chemistry to, like, feel like things are not right. And then, like, it just being able to identify that.
Right.
It, like, is such – it's just such a powerful tool.
Yeah. Knowing that there's – I think in some cases, too, it's, like, physically – neurological pathways have physically been grooved through your brain. And so you're sort of sliding down this comfortable slide and being able to identify, you know, the sort of the neurology of thought is helpful as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
I just wonder, like, so we were talking about, like, like when you say, like, how is this stuff legal or whatever? It's like we kind of figure out, like, okay, the reason that it's legal is because it has, like, this purpose. Like, that you could say, like, okay, so this is just a drug, you know? Like, I mean, Ritalin or what's that one that starts with an A? That
Adderall.
Yeah. Like, those are just drugs, right? Yeah. But they do have this, like, purpose. Like, we've seen that they have a positive influence on people's attention spans or their concentration or whatever it is. I always wonder, like roofies are an actual medicine for something, and I don't know what for. Like, I've never been able to figure out
why.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, why? Because they existed before people were using them.
Yeah, they are a medical.
So what do we do with, like, because a lot of that stuff is just like, there seem to be all these pills out there that people just use to take advantage of other people.
Yeah, and it's,
and
like,
that's what, like, baffles me.
Was,
like,
the good, like, yeah, what were they, like, originally meant,
like,
for?
Some doctor gave this to somebody and then thought to himself, like, huh, I bet I could. I won't say the word because it's a gross word. But
just as with other hypnotics, flunitrazepam should be strictly used only on a short-term basis or in those with chronic insomnia.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, sleeping, so that makes sense. Yeah. If,
but you don't wait. But then you. But isn't the thing, like, you don't remember anything when you wake up?
Oh.
So that's, like, an intense.
Oh, I don't know.
That'd be. I wouldn't like that about my insomnia.
I think I want to say Ambien does something similar. Hmm. From everyone I know that does take it, it's like there's a lot of food eating, sleep eating, or, like, you know, they seem perfectly awake. There's purchases on the internet. There are conversations and emails, and it's like they're like, oh shit, it's kind of terrifying.
It is
it's very terrifying.
Sedatives.
Yeah.
I will say that with Ritalin, or the times I've taken it, I think it's a little too much for me. It, like, so it doesn't actually clarify my thought. It does kind of speed me up, but it doesn't focus me.
Yeah,
because hyper focus is sort of my wheel, like something that.
Well,
I,
that's an ADD thing, right? Yeah. So, like, to either shift into, like, into hyper focus or the opposite, right?
Yeah,
speed.
And so the Ritalin doesn't really sort of focus me, but what I do find is that on occasion, on the occasions that I have it, what it does is it sort of bumps up my machinery. So if it's low functioning and kind of, like, you know. I'll have a residual positive effect from it. Not that, like, I'll take it. So I wouldn't want to be on it.
No.
Yes.
But as a spot check in my life, it has been useful.
Well, that's what freaks me about it. I used to take a decent amount of Ritalin. It just never seemed to work, and they kept increasing my dosage.
When
I was 15. Mm. Bad results, actually. But without going into that, it seemed like your initial reaction to taking something like that is exactly what you described. It doesn't make you actually feel better. It makes you feel kind of wired. It makes you feel a little bit, like, out of control. Or
out
your
of
body's
your body.
Out of control. Yes, exactly. And that, like, what they say is that if you take this religiously for a long enough period of time, then you're going to stop feeling those things. But isn't that just addiction? Like, isn't it just that, like, eventually
your
body is going to
normalize?
Yeah.
Like building it's like, if you drink five, you know, whiskeys every night, like, eventually you'll stop feeling the effects of that too.
Which
if
I do,
except
because
Trump
I'm
is our president for enough days, and eventually becomes normal.
Like
the idea, I know everybody's like normalizing or normalization is, like, such a buzzword, but it's I've been just thinking about it so much because it's like, so, because I want this to feel normal so badly, I want to feel normal so badly that I keep, like, there is, like, a part of me that is, like, wants to be lulled into a sense of normalcy. Yeah. And then, like, a bigger part of me that mostly due to just what other people have been bringing up, realizing like that that is like truly deathly dangerous.
Right, right.
Maybe like on like inauguration day, like there should be like a Trump lullaby that gets sung to all of us, like like sort of lulls us into a.
Yeah.
Oh, believe me, he will have so many cameras and so many fireworks.
I know
it's going to be a real reality show final round.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just so crazy what we can get used to.
I know. Pretty much anything.
Because it's much harder. It's like I'm struggling right now just in general with like nailing an appropriate balance between like living my daily life and continuing to like, you know, function and like sort of simultaneously holding a sense of like being alert and distressed and like and being able to sit with that, you know, but also like being able to sort of just do that thing that we're not so good at holding like sort of positive feel, like a sense of well-being and a sense of
disease,
like disease at the same time. But I think that's our jobs now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, our job is not to say like, oh, I'll just die. Let me fall in a hole.
Right.
You know, because like that, like truly like being alarmist is not the answer just because that like lowers our functionality.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But like we just have to all like be emotionally evolved enough to like hold two senses of being at the same time and I mean, just keep doing that forever.
Right. Know that the pendulum isn't going to swing so violently in either direction. But if our core is strong enough, we can kind of oscillate just enough to deal with both.
That's literally what I was told yesterday at physical therapy was to strengthen my core. So
for Trump.
For Trump. Exactly, yeah. He's going to need me. basically that same concept, but applied to the physical person or whatever that so much of what is going wrong below the waist and above the waist is approximately what's going on at the waist. If your core isn't strong, then you have bad posture and you have knee problems.
We're
and
all
this
sitting
thing
up
that.
Straighter.
You notice that in regards to Trump that the core is not strong, and so like we do find ourselves sort of vacillating back and forth, like it's like going back and forth between kind of thinking this is the worst thing that's ever happened, and then that other one, which I think is more common in like people like me, and we always have to really fight with it, where it's like, let's give it a chance to see how bad it is, how it's going to be. But the reality is that like it's never going to be that bad for me, so I don't get to decide that it isn't already bad, my world, as a white man, just my life gets to be good every day,
like,
and that sucks.
Confessing something
I know,
that we didn't know about.
Guys. Yeah. You're going to be shocked to hear this about me. I am of Caucasoid origins.
Oh, jeez. Caucasoid. That's a good name for it.
Yeah.
The one thing that sort of helped me in the one soothing thought, I think, is that like it kind of, I guess, happens every decade. You've got a Nixon, and you've got a Reagan, and then you've got this and what
Bush.
What does come out, Bush, and then what comes out of it is on the other side. The positive thing is that you have been a generation of, you know, youth that was sort of challenged by policy and it came out fighting, and you have, you know, punk music and good music and intellects and artists that come out of that.
Yeah.
So it will swing back. It's
definitely
just so crazy.
Yeah.
Hillary wasn't going to fix the world.
No.
If the world will be fixed, it'll be fixed by the people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when someone like a Trump gets elected, it's never a good thing, but that's what mobilizes the people.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we'd say, hey, that cool lady is going to fix everything.
My dad has a quote, and I'm sure he pulled it from something else, but he's like, the only thing that ever changed the world is people's own survival being challenged.
Yeah.
And that's what moves people to act and revolt and that kind of thing. And I think that's sort of where we were at and are at. And, you know, if you look at all of the micro communities that are so polarized or whatever, it's everybody sort of feels that they're at that point.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why your dad wouldn't take you to the doctor when you got sick. Challenge that survival. Madeline, what was the question that you wanted to ask?
Oh, it's kind of it's like maybe too broad of a question to ask this late in the game. But you mentioned that you've thought you were dying several times.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just very curious about that. Yeah. Do you mind playing us out with a with a story about how you thought you were
dying? It happened. I think it's a result of not doing doctors a lot and therefore not relying on doctors a lot. Yeah. And sort of being, I think by not checking in.
Yeah.
I end up going for these long periods of time, and then what I'll do is I'll go too far without having checked in with a doctor, and then I'll think that I'm definitely, definitely dying for sure, and it's overwhelming. And I all of a sudden, it's just that's how I ended up at the ear, nose, and throat.
Oh,
I mean, and that
was
one of three different specialists that I ended up seeing in a short period of time.
What were the other?
I went, oh, an eye doctor specifically. Yeah, there was all this weird stuff happening. Like, I had allergies for the first time, but it was like really intense. Like, I couldn't be out. My eyes were just like dripping. And
oh my gosh.
I, like, was having muscle spasms inside of my eyes from the allergies.
Oh my gosh.
I thought I had, you know, face cancer or whatever. Like, I just like everything. Yeah. I just was like, I'm rotting from the inside.
Yeah.
Something is amiss. And I definitely, that's basically what it comes down to, is that once every, you know, 5 years, I'll have this like sort of a panic attack where I definitely think I'm rotting from the inside.
It's like you're in something inside is like breaking its legs, so you'll pay attention.
The little me screaming inside.
Yeah. Has anything ever been bad, or has it always been generally like
fine? always checks out, but then And I think I had a GP that I no longer go to, because I did have a few weird experiences as an adult going to the doctor where that was just like, it sort of proved the whole thing as like such a scam.
I kind of, I feel like that.
Yeah.
Like I had, we all do.
Yeah. And the last GP I had that I went to regularly was just like that. It was, he'd just, you know, give you some trial box of like Zoloft or something, and you're like, my eye is twitching.
Yeah.
Why? What does that have to do with it? Literally, he came into my room one time and was like, as he was coming in to check me, he was like calling down the hallway, like, so if you like that, just let me know and I'll write you a prescription. I mean, it was
like a
fucking drug dealer.
Sorry,
I didn't mean to drop the F-bomb at this late point, but Jesus, Western medicine.
Yeah, no.
But he would always kind of roll his eyes at me and be like, you're fine, get out of here.
Yeah, it's basically every story we've told about a doctor on this podcast as well.
Yeah,
Dr. Marshmallow. That's the code name that we have for the doctor.
We had the same doctor for a while.
Yeah.
Doctor.
It was like my doctor, and then I like recommended him to Ben, but he's not a good doctor. He actually is a good doctor.
He's good.
He's
sort of recommended him.
Yeah.
I was sick, and Madeline just called the doctor and made an appointment, and I
had to go. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Ben had been, like, sick for a long time, and I was like, just hold on. I'm going to call my doctor.
I couldn't stop it, so I had to go. And I still go, but Madeline quit going to him.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's an okay doctor.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. At this point.
Is there anything you want to plug?
Yeah.
Like, or do you want to say your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle.
Anything like
that? Yeah, I'm at Emily Maya Mills everywhere. And there was something I did want to plug when I was sitting here, and now I can't remember what it is.
Right Now Kapow.
Right Now Kapow.
Disney XD. It's Monday. Is it Monday at?
Monday at 9.
Monday at 9 on Disney XD.
Yeah, it's fun. There's a lot of other UCB folk on that.
Great
Elena
folks.
Johnston and Mookie Blakelock and Alex Sidaro. And
some previous guests.
Justin Becker.
Created.
Yeah.
And Marley Halpern.
I've watched it for the very reason that all our friends are on it, and it's a really great fun show for not just for the kids.
Yeah,
you'd think Disney XD. It sounds like we'll plop the kids in front of it. And we'll have
some
adult time. No, adult time is Disney XD as well.
Yeah, it's truly funny.
It's really funny.
A blast doing it and recording it. And my stepkids are like, you said it was for kids. but meaning that they're big enough now that they want things that are a little bit more adult.
Yeah, yeah.
They think it's funny.
That's awesome.
Treat your stepkids.
Yeah. Grab your stepkids up. Put them in front of the TV.
Yeah.
Check out Right Now Kapow. Yeah.
Check it out.
Make yourself a nuclear family.
Yeah, just make one. We're all going to die sometime.
We're all going to die someday.
Thanks so much, Emily.
Thanks so much for having me.
This has been Definitely Dying. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter @DefinitelyDying.
Until next time, stay healthy.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.